Hello, and a very warm welcome to the UNITAS Conference 2023 podcast in partnership with Lumina Intelligence. And an especially big thank you to our sponsors, KP Snacks, for supporting us too. My name is Blonnie Wist, and I'm the in-flight director at Lumina Intelligence. I'm here with John Kinney, Managing Director of UNITAS. And John, we are here today to really set the scene for the UNITAS Conference 2023. Can you tell me what the key objective is for this year's conference?
Yes, of course. Hi, Bonnie. Hi, listeners. We run a conference every year, and the key thing for me is it's an opportunity to share the performance of both UNITAS and its members, to share the things that UNITAS are looking to develop, new initiatives, etc., for next year, but importantly, to provide a platform for our members and suppliers to talk, to network, share ideas, and hopefully build some business plans moving forward. That's fundamentally what we want people to get out of conference.
It's obviously a really big effort and investment to put on these events. Can you tell us why it's so important to you to run these events in person and what attendees can get out of it?
Yeah, it is a big commitment. And I know it's a big commitment for both members and suppliers in both costs and also in their time to come to the conference. And we don't take that lightly. We think, however, it is really, really important to get face-to-face meetings to people to meet each other. We all know how important relationships are in this channel. And to have sessions where we can talk in a nice environment, in a relaxed environment, that's why we only go at short haul. We take people to what we would consider some great locations, some great cities. So it's an encouragement, first of all, to attend. But it is just so important that we can break down some of the barriers and talk face to face in a nice environment of how we're going to grow businesses, find opportunities and work together. It is so, I guess, satisfying to hear both a member or a supplier just give me one little bit of feedback that says, I had a great conversation with so-and-so. I placed my first order. They're going to come and see me. It just justifies it, as far as I'm concerned, if we can open up that relationship and start building some great opportunities together. So that's why we think it's really important, both to take people away from the normal environment into a nice environment and hopefully with a bit of sun on your back, but where you can have them conversations and break down some of them barriers and start building those relationships.
Thank you. And I know you and the team are really proud of the content for this year. What would be your advice for how attendees can get even more value out of their time there?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, we really don't want people just to turn up and put themselves in listening mode. Yes, there's a lot of content to hear, but it is really important that you think in advance when you come. What do you want to get out of conference? Who is the supplier or who is the member that you want to target to try and either build on that relationship or open up and get a first order, get some distribution, get a relationship going? You know, we try and share as much as we can in advance of who's attending, so you can start to do that. We've got plenty of UNITAS people there to help you. So if you need to know who somebody is, how you can get to speak to them, help me introduce them, we're there to do that. That's part of our role to facilitate that. So my ask of both, I guess, members and suppliers is really think about what you want to get out of the conference before you find yourself on the plane home thinking, yeah, that's really good, but I wish I'd have spent a bit more time with X or a bit more time with Y, and just target in advance and get your own objectives on what you want to get out of the conference to make sure you do get generally a return investment to justify your time and effort to be there.
Amazing. And obviously within the content, we'll cover a lot of ways that attendees can mitigate the challenges and headwinds that are happening right now, but also exposing some of those opportunities facing UK food and drink. What's the one message that you hope attendees leave with after attending the conference?
Well, I think it's going to come across an awful lot without giving too much of the content away, but we're in a very strong position, and that's not to say that it's an easy marketplace. We know how tough and how challenging it is, both for members and suppliers. But there is some fantastic growth opportunities. You'll see it in the presentations. You'll hear about it in the numbers. And that's the one thing we want to get across, is that for businesses who are really looking for growth and where that growth is going to come from, hopefully we're going to present a real compelling case that the UNITAS and the membership is in a really strong position and is looking for ways that they can work better together to deliver on that. And that's the one message, is it's about growth.
That's incredible. Thank you so much, John. Now, throughout the rest of the podcast, we'll hear these themes that John has mentioned being picked up again by our amazing guest. We'll cover the importance of supply chain relations and what makes the independent sector so special, as well as the challenges and opportunities facing the UK food and drink industry over the coming months. My first guest is Jason Woura, CEO of Lioncroft Wholesale. Well, welcome to the podcast, Jason, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
So,
for having me. Yeah.
Privileged to have you on, and in case anyone is unaware, would you be able just to introduce yourself and give a bit of a background on your business?
Yeah, sure. I'm Jason Woura. I'm CEO of Lioncroft Wholesale, which is a business that was born about 3 years ago, but out of the back of the sale of East End Foods. So my family founded East End Foods in the late 60s, and that grew beyond our wildest dreams anyway as a family. We sold up in 2019, and then Lioncroft was born because I wanted to buy back the wholesale business to continue that journey. And Lioncroft was born out of the East End Foods wholesale business.
Amazing. And how would you describe your business? I mean, what core values and principles are at its heart?
Well, the funny thing was I formulated the values and vision statement shortly after taking over under Lioncroft. And that's something that we hadn't actually done as a family at East End Foods ever in the history of the business. But our vision statement is to be the best and most respected operator in the industry. And our values are honesty, opportunity, purpose, and energy. And you'll see that that spells hope. So it did resonate quite nicely with our workforce, our stakeholders, in that, we're hoping to build a much more stronger and more resilient business that serves our customers to the best of our ability, and build and develop and nurture our relationships with the supplier base too. So a very long-term viewpoint, but that's the vision and values of the business.
Yeah, hope is great to mention, especially as an unavoidable theme of the conference is going to be the difficulty of business conditions right now. And given the current cost of living crisis, obviously energy challenges and shifts in things like minimum wage and business rates, how are you dealing with this? How are you ensuring that your business is able to navigate these issues?
Well, I think first of all, anyone in business, any entrepreneur will tell you that there are always challenges in business. There's no doubt about that. So if it's not one thing, it'll be the other. We have a recessionary cycle. I think we're in a cycle at the moment. Brexit has obviously had an impact on things like availability and the supply chain, cost of labor, cost of goods, cost of electricity, and so on, is a great challenge at the moment. And we've worked through that by trying to cut unnecessary expenses. I think any rational and sensible business would do the same. But then it's also about trying to look for new opportunities and trying to capture a wider, broader range of customers. And we've done so over the last few years by going more into the hospitality end of the trade and supplying a lot of bars, restaurants, clubs in the Birmingham West Midlands area, and also stadiums. So we're very proud to have a few very well-known stadiums on our books that have been buying from us for about a year and a half now. So yeah, just broadening the base and trying to battle our way through the challenges that we're all facing.
Yeah, diversification of channels is a really interesting one. And building on that, and I guess reflecting on all of your business's biggest successes in the last years, what do you think are the main lessons that you've learned that you would attribute that success to?
Well, the last 3 years have been about building the foundations of Lioncroft off what was a very successful business in any case. But not many people will know this, but we, on day one, we didn't have a management team at all, so there was no back office. And we put that together very, very quickly and continued trading all along. And we were in the middle of COVID, of course, and had its own challenges and a very tough time to be trading. I think the key learnings really are around the culture of the organization, building a very strong and long lasting culture, and building this new team of people that had come in from different businesses, some corporate, some entrepreneurial, some mid-sized businesses. And these people have come and joined our team, and we've managed to create a very, very strong culture, a very strong unified approach. Business is all down to people at the end of the day. In this industry, we're all selling boxes of product. We're all doing a pretty similar thing to one another, but actually the culture of the organization really does make you future proof and really does kind of help develop the vision and the aims and goals of the business. So the main learning for me is around people and the culture of the business.
Yeah, people are everything, and that's what that builds up to the brand identity. How vital is that evolution of your brand to your ongoing success?
I think it's absolutely a cornerstone of the ongoing success. I think the way we interact with all our stakeholders is so important. Our supplier base, to every report that I've heard back, I mean, there's been various surveys carried out, and I know that the suppliers are very happy in the new world, as I call it, the Lioncroft brand. And you know, we've managed to encapsulate what was very strong about East End Foods and actually build on it by having a more professional and more corporate approach to life, whilst keeping the vibrancy and the entrepreneurial spirit to help find the opportunities that you know, present themselves to us. So I think that, you know, the strength of the brand is super important to the success of the business, and you can only do that through the people, through their interaction with your customers and their and our stakeholders, and that actually helps develop the business.
And how do you feel your competition is doing the same? Do you feel like they're evolving as robustly as you are?
I do keep a close eye on them as much as I can, especially the ones in Birmingham. I think the fact of the matter is that, look, there's some very good operators in the market, people who, like our business, you know, we've been in the game for 50 odd years, and other people have been similar time frames, and you know, they're all professional operators. I think what differentiates us is that we carry a bigger range of products, and we are specializing a lot in ethnic foods, just because of the East End Food connection. So that differentiates us in a way. And then our relationships within the Birmingham area and the length of time we've known a lot of the retailers really, really helps in terms of, you know, getting the lion's share of the trade out there. And, you know, but it's, you know, every day is a challenge, and you have to keep working hard. The minute you take your eye off the ball, it will no doubt, you know, you'll come up against some issues. So yeah, I think respectfully keeping an eye on the competition, whilst at the same time focusing on our own capabilities and our own agenda and our own, means and manner of working, is for me really, really important.
Something I've noticed is how much you really champion the independent trade. How important is that sector and, I guess, its vibrancy to you?
Well, that's the lifeblood of our business. The independent sector, I mean, my family started out by selling butchery products, meat products and spices and such like door to door from a very, very small base. And the independent trade, when we went into wholesaling and manufacturing, really, really did support us. So we have a real close affinity to the independent trade. And it's changed quite a lot. There's a lot of new entrants coming in to the market, different cultures, different backgrounds of people. And it's really interesting trade to be in, actually, because you get to see these changes over the years. And how the trade has developed. And I think, you know, it's still a strong, healthy, live and kicking channel within the food industry. And long may it continue.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I was hoping we could end with one final message of hope for listeners. What would your one lesson or message be for attendees of the UNITAS conference who are wanting to move forward and evolve over the next year?
Well, of course, as I said, the word hope is very central to our values at Lioncroft. And I think hope in this industry is about, you know, supporting your customers as best you can, keeping that retail energy, keeping those entrepreneurial people, you know, keeping the spirit of what we're about. That really will resonate with people. And, you know, as I said, it's still a very, very healthy market to be in. And I do believe that actually as consumers, we do prefer to shop locally. And trade or give our trade to people who are business owners and independent traders, possibly in this day and age, over and above the big multiples.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us, Jason.
My pleasure.
Next up, we had a super insightful conversation with Tom Elliott, founder of Pizza Pilgrims. Well, pleasure to have you, Tom. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Would you be all right just to introduce yourself, explain a bit about your business, your background?
Sure. My name's Tom, and I am the co-founder with my brother of a pizza business that is broadly based in London, but is starting to spread its wings across the UK, called Pizza Pilgrims. And yeah, we have just celebrated 10 years as a bricks and mortar business, although we've done a little longer before that. We started out in a market stall, so it's been a... That was our inauspicious start, but we've been sort of slowly figuring out as we go along, and we're now 24 pizzerias, which is head spinning to say the least. We wanted to sort of revisit our roots, and so the original business kicked off with a pizza pilgrimage through Italy, and we drove a sort of ridiculous three wheeled what they call a Piaggio Ape through Italy, one with a view that that would become our vehicle on the market, and we'd put the pizza oven in the back of it. But obviously secondary plan was to like learn something about pizza, because when we first set off before Pizza Pilgrims, we knew nothing about pizza. I mean, literally nothing. So we have learned everything we could over time. But yeah, we wanted to revisit that idea of like going to Italy, or more specifically Naples. And like, you know, we've now built some incredible relationships in Naples. You know, we still work with the guys from Caputo, the flower guys who we've worked with for 10 years plus. You know, my favorite version of it is we first ever tasted Neapolitan pizza in Naples on our first pizza pilgrimage in 2011. This time around, we went back having built a Vespa / pizzeria. And we like to call it the world's smallest pizzeria. We can't actually back that up, but I'd like to find a smaller one. But yeah, it's a pizzeria on a Vespa with a sidecar. Anyway, we drove that to Naples, and the same pizzeria where we first tasted Neapolitan pizza, Da Michele, which is like a temple to pizza in Naples. We now know those guys so well that they let us, for the first time in their history, they let us do a pop-up in their store for a night. And we put like our banner above the door, and we were in the kitchen, and we served their guests as well as our guests. And it was just this like insane sort of moment of like, we first tasted this type of pizza here. It was about 11 years earlier, and here we are, you know, down the line, we're mates with the owners of this place. They're letting us, you know, they're celebrating us as much as we're celebrating them. And it's just surreal and amazing. And, you know, it was a nice feeling.
Oh, that's absolutely incredible. And Neapolitan pizza really is special. And you were probably one of the first of the groups on the scene to kind of do that style and the sourdough base and to really bring it to the mainstream. What did you learn on that journey? Like, what are the secrets of pizza?
I mean, the main thing about pizza is it's about simplicity. And I think, you know, it's about doing the simple things right. And, you know, Neapolitan pizza dough, as much as, you know, there are tomes written about it, there are people who've dedicated their lives to it, hundreds and thousands of people. You know, it's got this whole revered subculture around it, you know, blogs and tweets and God knows what else debate. It literally comes down to four ingredients. It's flour, water, yeast, and salt. And I think that, you know, that is a testament to, I think people from the outside looking in think pizza is just a very simple thing. And, you know, the amount of calls we get from sort of pubs and stuff going like, hey, we just want to put pizza on our menu. You know, can you just tell us how to do it, please? And I was like, we literally spend weeks, months of like man hours the whole time, just trying to figure out how to do it a little bit better and discussing all the nuance. And like, people think it's this simple thing, but as soon as you scratch the surface, you know, that search for perfection is real. And it's got that kind of, there's a very big pizza culture in Japan, and this is always a very sweeping connection, but it's got that same level of like when you sort of see a sushi master, and you know, all that level of nuance and like the technical level and all of that stuff going on there, and that Japanese cookery that they're, you know, they're so famous for. It's got a very, very similar vibe to it. It's just, you know, it really is a very technical thing, and like getting the crust to rise the right amount and getting the gluten structures right and the right amount of yeast, the right flour, the right blend of flour, all that stuff, you know, it's a technical thing. And but you know, as with everything Italian, they make it all just feel like an art, and it's not, you know, it's all very romantic and brilliant, and you know, this whole historic thing and about learning and training, and that is true too. And we, you know, we've been fortunate to work with some really world-class pizza chefs in our time at Pizza Pilgrims, and we still have many of them still working for us now. And you know, we're always, whenever someone new joins the team, we're always learning something new from them and trying to bring that all together into one big tome of how to be better every day, basically.
I guess the challenge is making something that is actually very nuanced and complicated seem so simple and just very enjoyable. Are you ever tempted to mess with it and innovate for innovation's sake and do anything really weird and wacky?
It's a great question. And I think when we first went to Naples, we, you know, Naples was very much of the opinion like, this is how you do it. And, you know, you never mess with it. And like, you know, the margarita is the absolute pinnacle, and you would never change anything, and like, you know, you keep it simple, stupid, and all that kind of stuff. And actually what we've seen in the 10 years that we've been going to Naples, or 12 years, is you know, that has really changed, and like they're much more experimental over there now, and like there are chefs pushing the boundary, like Ciro Oliva, who they're doing new stuff that I think maybe 10 years ago that just wouldn't have been accepted. So you know, from our point of view, we're really trying to respect the bones of pizza, I guess. And so like, we still get our flour, we still got our mozzarella, we still got our tomatoes from where we used to get them 12 years ago, from in and around Naples essentially. But can we push the boat out and have a bit more fun with it and test the fences and see what works? And yes, we can. And I think it's about walking that line for us. It's about keeping the tradition, never messing with the core, but also trying to have a bit of fun and trying stuff. And that's why we have a guest special every month. It allows us to just be a bit creative and try something new and see if it works. And sometimes it works great and they become regular guest specials. And if they really work, they potentially even work their way onto the core menu. And sometimes it's a disaster. I won't name any names, but you know, they're resigned to the history books pretty quick. And you know, I think we've unintentionally, but maybe a tiny bit intentionally, you know, we've definitely tested the resolve of many of Italians in terms of where, you know, still to this day, putting pasta on our carbonara pizza. So we put pasta actually on the pizza, still very divisive and not something that I think most Italians are on board with. But I maintain that it's still a better pizza with it. And so that, you know, that's where that is. Obviously, there's the classic divisive ingredient of pineapple, which, you know, we've done as a special, but nothing more. But then, you know, we've had an interesting one recently where the divisiveness flipped. So we did on our menu now is a pizza called the Americano, which has got frankfurters and chips on it, on the pizza. And all English people look at it and go, are you kidding me? Like, I would never eat that. I think some of them secretly then run off and do try it. But what's so fascinating about it is, like, in Naples, that's a super legit pizza. So like all the kids in Naples, that's what they eat. And all of our pizza chefs who work for Pizza Pilgrims, they are obsessed with that pizza. It's our number one sold pizza to team members because it is, you know, it is legitimate Neapolitan thing. And so people think that's us being, you know, oh, they've lost it, what are they doing? They've, you know, they used to be good type thing. And actually what we're doing there is really reflecting back a really Neapolitan product.
Wow, I love that. I honestly never would have guessed. So that's an amazing story. And you mentioned just how long-standing those relationships with your suppliers are. What do you think is most important to you about that relationship?
I think it's just like, initially it was just, you know, we really believed in the product. It was a great, you know, we'd met those guys early on. They'd never let us down. There was no reason. Obviously, we got a lot of people being like, you could get flour cheaper from here, or you could, and we just, we felt the power of the relationship was more strong than that, which I know sounds a bit corny, but it's true. But as we've grown, I think, and we're just starting to see this now, you know, first of all, that, you know, that relationship starts to pay back in terms of, you know, when COVID comes along and there's only so much flour coming into the country, we're the people who are getting it, you know, and, you know, those relationships are real, and you can't come in and make up a 10-year relationship off the fly. Like, it's just not possible. So that was obviously a huge benefit. But the other thing is, you know, we're now at a size where, you know, we're not by any means their biggest customers, but we're at a size where we're kind of, you know, not irrelevant to them. And I guess we're also at a size where we can try stuff. So in both cases, we're starting to have really interesting conversations with them both. You know, when I say both, I'm talking mainly about flour here and mozzarella, about, you know, some interesting sustainability questions, for example. Like, you know, what if we looked at using regenerative wheat? So you guys, as the, you know, as the flour mill, would make it, but we'd maybe work together to try and find a wheat product that could actually help make this a more sustainable product. Same with the cheese. That how can we work together to make sure that, you know, the product is as sustainable as it can? Was that where, be that, you know, where the milk comes from, or could we look at something crazy like direct fermentation? Like, and these are conversations that, you know, we are really excited to be guinea pigs on with them as we all kind of learn about this new future. And, you know, we're in no position, of course, to tell them how to do what they do, and they obviously know way more about it than we do. But you can't go and test some of these really big stuff on a huge client, and you can't really test it on a tiny client, because it's not really a real test. So we're at a nice size where we can really kind of be a good guinea pig for some interesting ideas, and hopefully we will be. I mean, the best example of that is our basil. So I discovered as I've started to get deeper and deeper into the sustainability thing, I discovered that we at certain times of the year particularly flew in a lot of our basil from Israel, because that's where it's grown, because that's the correct climate in winter for it to be grown. So that obviously is not what we wanted to do. And then Gavin, our MD, met someone from Y Food, which is a sort of collective of new exciting food businesses, and they were looking to start growing basil. And anyway, to cut a long story short, we became their first customer. We now grow all of the basil for Pizza Pilgrims in a vertical farm in Leighton. And it's all brought by electric bike to our sites in London.
100%. And is there anything else that you can see happening with your customers? Are they different in any way to they were a few years ago? Any sort of changes in the trends you're spotting in the market?
I mean, you know, I think it's the usual stuff. I mean, we're quite lucky in the position we sit in the market, in that we're still quite a sort of cheap option. Great value, never say cheap. Because you know, I think we're seeing sort of new people maybe coming in from different, you know, maybe higher echelons potentially in the current climate. I think people are eating out less, but potentially when they are, they're kind of going for it more. I think, you know, our average spend, I think, has probably gone up, and people are having that second drink and stuff. It's pretty well trodden conversations. But I mean, we've always wanted to build a business that is not faddy and not about a specific type of thing. You know, we've always wanted to be approachable. We've always talked about this idea of being classic, not cool. And I think by definition, like, cool is something that is fleeting and of its time. And I think, you know, great pizza that's, you know, that we try and do is to the best of our possible ability with the best ingredients at the right price. I would hope that is a classic, not cool type situation. And, you know, we're not looking for we really want all comers to be, you know, enamored with Pizza Pilgrims, whether that's your grandmother, your first date, your mates, your kids, like whoever it is, that they should be welcome and they should be able to enjoy a great pizza at the right price. And unfortunately, that's just never going to be cool.
Do you feel like people are treating themselves more? Do you feel like they're trading up? Do you feel like they're adding on?
I think they are doing a little more. Yeah, I think, but I think, you know, but they're probably doing it less. And I think, we are seeing that. Like I say, we are seeing our ticket size going up. But, you know, it's very difficult, if I'm honest, to come to Pizza Pilgrims and spend a lot of money. Like, you're not going to come to Pizza Pilgrims and sit for 3 hours and have a starter, a main course and a pudding and then another bottle of wine. It's just not the vibe of the place.
And very well said. Feels like a perfect place to end it there. So, Tom, thank you so much for taking part. Amazing stuff. My next guest is Sam Henderson, Managing Director at Lohmann Wholesale. Well, welcome to the podcast, Sam, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's good to meet you, Bonnie.
Now, I know that most people will be familiar with Lawan Foods, but would you be happy just to introduce you to those who don't know?
I'm Sam Henderson, Managing Director of Lawan Foods. Lawan Foods is a food wholesale business that we started from scratch 26 years ago. We distribute throughout Scotland, also down to Newcastle, a little bit of Northern England, and also soon to go into Northern Ireland. We also manufacture cakes and tray bakes for the coffee shop market, which we distribute across the UK.
And how would you describe the core values, you know, the DNA of your business? What are your priorities?
I think innovation, our people. People are core to what we do, looking after them and also seeing them grow. And also sustainability. Those are the passions that drive us. And, you know, we work hard to make sure that we can have a good environment that allows us to grow and that our people can enjoy doing that, but also we can be kind to the planet at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely critical. And if listeners could be a fly on the wall on your strategy and planning sessions, what would you be discussing? What would we hear you talk about?
A few key topics at the moment. A big one, which I think a lot of wholesalers will kind of respond to, is staffing. It's very difficult to get people at the moment, especially skilled staff. And the other one is technology. I think everybody's aware that there's a lot of movement in technology just now, and we are trying to tap into as much of that as possible. That also ties in with the staffing element. If we can descale and get technology to do a lot of the roles that staff would otherwise do, then that's a good step forward. That will help us to grow and also make it a bit easier for the staff they do keep. We can pay them better and give them better jobs.
And it's great to hear you talk about how sustainability and the planet is so core to the business. What kind of actions or strategies are you introducing to make that really central?
We have switched all of our company car fleet to full electric. That happened this year. We started about 3 or 4 years ago trialling it, and now we've completed that. We have also this year installed 270 PV panels, which gives us about 14% of our energy use from our own generation. And we have stage 2 and 3 underway, which will be complete by next year, which will probably take us up to about 50% of our generation of electricity through a sustainable source. Although we have already sourced all of our electricity from renewable sources, but not just generated it ourselves. We've converted all of our trucks into hybrid technology as well, which saves about 70 tonnes of CO2 a year. And we also do as much as we can to source locally. This not only helps the local communities and the local businesses to get a start and get a bit of business, but also there's a lot less food miles. And we find that often the quality is better and a bit different than buying from further afield.
Absolutely. And how about these challenges like staffing and keeping abreast of technology? How do you see them evolving into opportunities for you?
There's a whole variety of different things we can do. One part of technology we're looking at the moment is voice picking. This is something that probably some wholesalers already brought on board, but it's new to us. And this allows our staff to go into the warehouse to pick stock, and they are told what to do from their headset. And then they have two hands to pick it, and hopefully it's a bit quicker and a bit more efficient and easier for them as well. They don't have pen and paper to manage. So that's one element of it. And in terms of the office staff and telesales, we're moving more and more towards EDI ordering, guiding our customers more towards ordering on an app and online. So there's less pressure for our telesales staff to sit in key orders. And that is a progression we're working on. In terms of other advancements in technology, a big part of our business is understanding our business. And we've engaged an IT company to come in and basically connect all the different sources of data in our business into one desktop, what would you call it, dash cam, so that we can see what our business is doing. You know, everything from how many kilograms of CO2 we generate per kilogram of product delivered, you know, what's our MPG per mile for the vans. You know, there's a whole host of data that we're working on bringing in, so that basically we can wake up the morning and look at the screen and it tells everything we need to know. Turnover, but also how the business is performing and how many mistakes we make, how many customers we have, and how many we look after. It's technology is going to help us do that very easily. Whereas at the moment, a lot of our staff have to generate these reports manually. And for all the system might generate some data, this then has to be put into a format you can digest. And my view is that we need this to be done automatically and kind of move forward. A lot of other industries have it. Wholesale quite often lags behind in IT, and I think we need to go further ahead. And obviously, if the more we can digitise, the more we'll be ready to adopt AI when it becomes relevant to our industry. The other technological advances are robotics and automation. We have had a look at robotic forklifts. At the moment, they're just too expensive, but they will come down in price. They're smashing. They'll pick up the pallets and go and put them away in a loading bay somewhere that you want. But you know, they're far too slow at the moment, and you know, about 10 times the price of a normal forklift, so not viable. But they will be one day.
And what areas do you think that wholesale is ahead of the curve and a bit of an early adopter?
I think there's a lot of focus on the technology to reduce the carbon emissions from vehicles. Vehicles are the big thing. We've had a long look at hydrogen fuel cells in our vehicles, and I think the wholesale industry is definitely driving that. They're not quite there yet. We've looked at prototypes, and I would imagine the next year or two, hydrogen fuel cells will be the way forward. Basically, it's an electric vehicle with a range extender using hydrogen, and the only emissions from that are water. So I think the wholesale sector needs something like that. We can get to net zero in every other area of the business, but it's that last bit with the diesel-burning trucks, and I think wholesalers are pushing down that road.
Yeah, really big opportunity. And what other opportunities are really exciting to you? What do you see evolving in the UK food and drink market?
Yeah, I think quality and innovation and ease of use of products. So obviously we've talked about staffing, but that's not just our industry. Other industries are suffering from this as well. Our customers struggling to get chefs, cooks, staff of all kinds. And you know, one of the big things that we have looked at is products that that customers can bring in that maintain quality but are very low contact. They don't need much staff. So it may be we've got a Rosette-starred Indian restaurant that's producing really high quality curries that someone can bring in and put out there. It's not just a mass product, you know, a mass produced product that's poor quality. It's really, really good quality, and they can serve it with pride. It's that kind of thing we're looking at. So it's going to save our customers time. But sometimes some customers are having to shut because they just don't have staff to open or shut for 3 days a week, whereas we can give them products that allow them to serve quality, maintain their standards, but they don't need many staff for. That to me is the interesting innovation. There's also a big drive away from allergens. Customers want fewer and fewer allergens in their products, and which is great. And you know, fewer allergens generally means less processing, and so the products are kind of a bit more natural. And that's something with local sourcing that really fits together. So we're keen to kind of go down that road. Plant-based has obviously been everywhere and talked about. In our experience, there's probably more talk and noise than there has been actual product sold. We do sell a fair bit, but it's not as much as you might think based on the amount of media attention that it gets. But it's here to stay, and it'll definitely grow as time goes on, in my opinion. We stock quite a range, and it'll be interesting to see, I think, it needs to be less processed and more natural. You know, a carrot is already plant-based. It just needs to be cooked nicely. You know, so I think a lot of the plant-based companies maybe need to kind of think about that. Don't over-process.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really, really nice to hear how helpful you're being to your customers. Is there any advice or ways that you feel you could get more value out of your existing partnerships and relationships with people you work with?
I think it's always about lines of communication, understanding the challenges that our customers are going through. You know, I think we're in partnership. You know, they can't exist without us. We can't exist without them. So it's making sure that we talk to them and see what their needs are. But mostly, as it always has been, it's about service. It's delivering what they need when they need it. And listening when they say, you know, I need something that I can just serve that's quality, that I don't have to do much with. It's just making sure we understand what their challenges are. You know, if they can't get staff in to open up at 10 in the morning, we'll have to deliver after 10. You know, it's just being open and prepared to work with customers. That's how we approach it. It's a service-based industry. Yeah.
And how important are your relationships, and how do you, I guess, nurture and make those as mutually beneficial as they can be?
Yeah, we have. Days when we bring our customers in and we have a showcase in a boardroom here. We have a kitchen off of it and you know, we can get suppliers in who cook off the products and demonstrate. We bring in a selection of customers who have a like-minded or in similar industries but don't compete with each other and let them taste and try and talk. You know, the more we do that, the more we find we get the right feedback and we can adapt our business to fit what's required, not just try and push what we want to sell. That's how we do it. We have a good sales team, a good telesales team, and we're always saying, be open, solve the customer's problem. Don't just tell them to try and get them to take what we want to push at them.
Yeah, incredible. And if I had to ask you what you think crystal ball we'll be talking about in 5 years' time, what do you think the big changes that will be top of the agenda for food and drink
definitely technology, automation, robotics, AI. For me, that's the big thing, and if you're not ready to embrace that, staffing issues are going to get much worse. That's a certainty. Finding staff to do certain jobs will be very difficult, and so embracing technology is the way forward, but that needs to also be done in conjunction with embracing local, champion their local sourcing and the products we have in the UK that are fantastic. In Scotland, there's wonderful produce. And some things I just don't think we eat enough of it. So I think that will be the focus. Why ship it across the world when we can do it right here?
Finally, Sam, do you have any advice for new entrants to the market, anyone who's looking to get into the exciting world of wholesale?
Other than don't open in Scotland because we're here already, I would say... Find a niche where there's a market that's about to develop and grow. Find something that isn't currently being serviced. And it might be something unexpected. An example I would think of would be high-end premium chocolates. Maybe coffee shops might want to start selling them and have a little cabinet next to the coffee station. No idea if that would work, but something like that. And also make sure that you digitize from the start. Everything should be online ordering. Everything should be automatic. And as few staff as possible, but still by giving the service to the customer. Make sure that customers can see what they're going to buy and they understand where they're going to get it. Keep your distribution distance down initially. Focus on maximising what you can get from a certain area. Keep your overheads down and just focus on that niche. And be adaptable. You have to be flexible. You know, you might think you've got it right, but customers will soon tell you when they don't order. And you need to be able to kind of change a little. As long as you've got the core direction right at the beginning, you just need to flex and find your way through it.
Very well said, and fantastic advice, Sam. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Next up, we heard from Matt Collins, Trading Director at KP Snacks. So hello, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Blonnie. A pleasure to be with you and a pleasure to be recording this podcast ahead of the exciting Unitas Athens conference in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring it on. So just in case anyone isn't familiar with KP Snacks, would you be right just to summarise your business? Tell us a bit about your role within that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, hopefully most people are familiar with us, but just in case they're not. So my name's Matt Collins. I am the Trading Director at KP Snacks. We are part of the InterSnack Group, and we're home of some of the most iconic snack brands in the UK. So from things such as Tyrrells and Pop Chips to McCoy's to Hula Hoops to Pom Bear to Discos, over 20 well-known household brands. We're part of the InterSnack Group after being acquired from United Biscuits or divested out of the United Biscuits portfolio just over 10 years ago by InterSnack. We're really proud to be part of the InterSnack Group, and we operate in the exciting scalable category that is crisps, snacks, nuts, popcorn and peanuts. And we are growing. The category is growing. It's a £4.3 billion category. It's growing at 13.6%. And really exciting for listeners of this channel is the convenience part within it is growing faster at plus 17.4%.
That's incredible growth and really positive to hear about, especially given the challenging conditions out there. What is the current focus of KP and how are you navigating the challenges on the market right now?
Yeah, look, so as I said, so for us, it's been a really exciting time. This year, we celebrate our 10-year anniversary after joining InterSnack Group, and it's been an incredible journey over that period. So as we've grown from circa 14% market share to over 20% market share, that's been achieved through both a series of strategic acquisitions. So we acquired the Butterkiss brand, number one popcorn brand, back in 2017. Then the following year, we acquired the Tyrrells and Pop Chips brands in 2018. That really gave us a further enhancement and strengthening of our portfolio, because Tyrrells being the number one hand-cooked crisp, where we had a gap in the portfolio, and then Pop Chips really being the beacon for better for you and healthier snacking. So that really completed our portfolio build. For us, we are looking to see how we can sort of continue to grow, how we can continue to help our retail and food service partners thrive and prosper in the category, and see how we can over the next few years. We've got a really clear vision of seeing how we can become a £1 billion organisation, again, through strategic acquisitions and continued organic growth. For us, it's about really being agile and resilient. And I think through today's trading conditions and challenges over the last 4 to 5 years, we've had some extraordinary times, whether it's been Brexit and the challenges that has brought, whether it's been the pandemic back in 2020. Then as we moved into some of the geopolitical events leading to challenges around record food inflation, labour shortages, and at KP, we had our very own crisis as well when we were hit by a cyber attack in February 2022. So it's been a really, really challenging, extraordinary, and dare I say it, unprecedented times. So this year we were hoping for a lot more stability and normality, and also planned for it to be our biggest year ever. And look, clearly, we're very conscious of the challenge around the cost of living crisis and the impact that is having upon shoppers and how retailers are having to adapt and pivot to work with that.
Yep, it's not easy at all. And how are you taking action as a business, and how can, I guess, people who work with you also help in that challenge?
Yeah, so for us, it's about how do we continue to make sure our category and our brands within that category represent value. And they're a very affordable treat, and they're very resilient within any sort of economic times. What we see work particularly well in this channel is Price Mark packs. We've seen continued growth of Price Mark packs, the leading sort of format being 125. That's actually grown at 31.4%. We're outperforming that, growing just over 60.3%. So we're really seeing continued growth in Price Mark packs. I think that helps a couple of reasons. It helps with pricing architecture, but it also helps consumers have that reassurance and confidence through the price flash. So for us, that's very much something we're continuing to do, making sure we develop, innovating, and bringing out new products in PMP, whilst also ensuring that they remain very competitive at the right price points with the right shared margins behind it. So that's certainly one thing. We're also understanding about how we can bring to life events and activation as we go into autumn and winter. A big thing will be is the opportunity around the big night out being the big night in, to helping people save money and reduce costs. So it's how do we really inspire and disrupt both in the depots and in the shops to create that theatre and to create the occasion and the mission to really maximise the big night in. And for one of us, a really key brand to achieve that is Butterkissed. You know, absolutely synonymous with home movies, movie night together, Saturday night takeaway type television, or X Factor, or Britain's Got Talent, or Strictly Come Dancing, any of those. It certainly really will lend itself well to it. So it's how do we keep bringing that level of excitement and inspiration into the channel?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting to hear how you're targeting those missions with particular brands, and I guess turning those challenges into opportunities. And I suppose thinking about wider opportunities for the UK food and drink industry, is there anything that you've got your eye on as a business or personally that you're keeping a close watch on?
Well, another thing that's very firm upon our agenda is being a responsible manufacturer is how do we keep also developing and reformulating and innovating our products to be better for you. So just recently, the sort of we have been through a lot of legislation and regulation with the HFSS coming through last October. The second part, which was due this October, is now actually paused until 2025. But that doesn't stop us. We've got a big commitment as a business on how we can keep renovating some of our portfolio. We've got over 100 products that are now classed as non-HFSS compliant. And we've also made the commitment that by 2030, over 55% of our sales will come from either non-HFSS compliant products or products that are under 100 calories. So it's all part of our People and Planet strategy, helping people have great taste in snacks, but also better for you snacks and healthier food.
Fantastic. That's super insightful and really, really helpful. Thank you so much, Matt. I am sorry to say that this now brings a close to the podcast. Firstly, I want to say a big thank you to my guest for taking the time to speak with me, and also thanks to KP Snacks for supporting and sponsoring the podcast. I really hope this has given you a sneak peek into the brilliant content that you can expect in Athens at the UNITAS Conference 2023. Thank you so much for listening.